Howdy, folks, and welcome to the May the 18th version of Dead Pit Radio. I'm Uncle Bill.
Hello, I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
We're back after everybody seemed to be incredibly pissed off at me for missing the call-in portion.
Do you people don't think Uncle Bill has feelings at all, or what?
I do. I cry a lot.
Yep.
So I don't need you motherfuckers making things worse by going on about, oh my God, he's fucking turning his back on everybody.
Uncle Bill is telling you right now, the tongue bathe on a juicy wet dick. Tongue bathe on a juicy wet dick. Right now, tongue bathe on a juicy wet dick.
Oh.
Then gag right on the cock.
So that should be a message to y'all. Yeah, I want you to know that.
The juicy wet dick. He wants you to tongue bathe it.
Yeah. We made that just for all of our fans. By the way, if you haven't realized this yet, or not, if you criticize us, you're not a fan of ours. We don't take kindly to that shit.
There's no criticism with Dead Pit.
Everything we do is right. And the sooner you know that, the better.
That's right. So, we do have a show for you tonight. A good fan / friend of the show, Tar Heel, whatever his name is on YouTube. I tried to remember his name. It's Tar Heel, bunch of numbers.
Tar Heel McJenkins.
Even though he's a fucking asshole from North Carolina that likes the Tar Heels,
yeah,
we'll still give him credit because he actually came up with this idea of doing the worst remakes, and this is the particular show. I think he wanted to do a video, but we thought it would probably be a better show to do since we can be more in-depth.
That's the best idea that's come out of North Carolina since the airplane.
That's right. So, first news topic, though, we're going to talk about this week is the disappearance of Nick Stahl. He has disappeared.
That's the lead story that we're going to start off with.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did, and nobody knows what the hell happened to him, which is, in a way, a blessing.
He actually got lost trying to find his career.
He stumbled around in the dark trying to find his career.
He was, like, wondering where his career was, and, like, he actually got lost himself.
Well, if he ever really needs to find it, he just go back and watch Terminator 3, and that's where it went. It went right after that movie.
He could tour the convention circuit with Christina Loken. I mean, hell, I would totally do that if it was up to me.
Yeah, just, like, sit around and try to get looks at her ass.
I'd be like, hi, honey, and pat her on the ass every once in a while. I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's cool. We're in that
movie
together.
That guy was annoying as hell anyway. But, I mean, I don't want him to be missing or anything. But still.
Yeah, you want him to show up dead.
Kind of. I'm not going to lie.
Well, from my understanding, Nick Stahl's had a lot of problems with drug abuse. So it's probably,
maybe
he's probably on a binge somewhere, I'm guessing.
Yeah, or he could have got caught up in the Mexican drug cartel.
Yeah, or it could have ended up being like Lane Staley. He could be dead and rotten right now with cockroaches eating him.
Do cockroaches eat people?
Yeah.
Like after they die? Yeah.
Worms,
that's
maggots,
scary
and all
thought
that shit
right there.
Crawling up his ass, his dead asshole right now and just eating his insides.
Building like a little roach mausoleum in his ass.
Yeah, we can hope that's what's happened to him, but probably not. He's probably, I'm just.
We're sensitive here.
We are.
We are. Yeah.
In all seriousness, though, Nick Stahl, I hope that you are found along with your career and you can possibly come back and do some more movies that nobody else have seen.
Yeah, I liked in the blurb that they had on Yahoo or whatever for when he was missing, they said he was really excited about working on his new independent film. And it was like something that nobody heard. I was like, really? That's the only thing that you have to say about the man? It's like he was excited to work on an independent film.
Yeah. The Lady and the Cracker. That's the name. He's working on. It's shot in black and white.
Yeah.
It's got some pretentious curly-headed director.
The Lady and the Cracker.
The Lady and the Cracker. But in all seriousness, though, we do have a show this week. We got some horror news to get to. We have a movie to review, Uncle Bill. We haven't reviewed a movie in a while.
It's very true. It's going to be exciting for us to actually do this.
Yeah. So we're going to have to kick our movie reviews up into high gear here shortly because there's going to be a lot of shit coming out.
I know, but there ain't really anything come out for the last couple of months, honestly, like,
not anything at least worth a shit.
Of any note, yeah, there's been a lot of stuff come out, but.
Yeah, like, I've gotten shit in there. Like, I get an endless amount of shit from Anchor Bay. Like, literally.
Well, that's the same thing with me and Lionsgate. Like, I've probably got six or seven Lionsgate horror films that no one should ever watch. I mean, honestly.
Have you gotten any of the Bloody Disgusting Selects in?
No, I haven't. I don't know how I was able to escape that. But I'm thankful.
That seems like back in the day, like when we were doing the show, Lionsgate used to be the best to actually send like stuff for giveaways and shit. Like that seemed like something back in the day that we would have gotten like 50 copies each of. Like
yeah.
All those.
Yeah.
But not anymore. It's a tough economy, folks.
It really is. But they keep sending me that stuff. I don't ask for it. It's not like I request any of that
stuff.
Well,
Anchor Bay's the same way. I mean, I don't request any of the, they just send everything, like all the independent, like horror movies. And
it's always just, like when you get it, it's the biggest bummer. You open it up, you think it's something killer, and it's like, fucking insecticide. Watch
it. If it's something from Anchor Bay, usually anymore, I don't expect it to be that killer.
Yeah, that's true.
But you could be surprised. I mean, you never know with some of these movies. But,
Asshole Strangler. Be a good name for a horror film. Yeah.
But other than that, we're going to talk about our 10 worst horror remakes of all time. This is going to be an epic show. A lot of people always, you know, reference Dead Pit with remake hate. And
you're right.
You know, it's always been that way for some reason. Since we started the show, we were bitching about remakes. And we still are, almost seven years later.
It's a passion, really.
Yeah.
I mean, some people have passions to create things and do things like that, but we don't. We have a passion to destroy other people's
work. A lot of people have, you know, it makes them feel good to be positive and stuff.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't work.
It makes me feel really great to just fucking, like, make people cry. And that's what I pride
myself on
doing.
The fact that I really, truly believe that we had some small part in two things, the destruction of Fangoria as it was known, and Eli Roth's career, does make me happy.
That's true. Eli Roth has no chance of ever directing another movie.
No.
Like, somebody told me he was doing something, I think it might have been Steve, he's doing a series for Netflix.
Well, he's going to set the world on fire now.
It's original Netflix series. And maybe he's not even, I don't even know if he was the director or the producer of it or something.
And next week he'll be doing a puppet show down at the fucking middle school.
But anyway, it's going to be an action-packed edition of the show. Let's get right into it because I just heard news about this. I'm buying this motherfucker because I was waiting for Anchor Bay to come out with this and they never fucking come out with it. Army of Darkness, the Necronomicon edition, Uncle Bill, will be available to buy as a triple disc DVD and Blu-ray set. On June the 6th, the box set that boasts the third and final installment of the much-beloved Evil Dead film cycle, Army of Darkness, the Necronomicon, contains both versions of Army of Darkness, theatrical and the director's cut, a litany of special features, and comes packaged in one-off deluxe presentation. In addition to the high-definition original theatrical release offered in the Blu-ray, this volume includes the DVD version of theatrical and the director's cut, 12 hand-drawn pages from the Book of the Dead, and extras all housed in a collectible rubber Necronomicon pack. Bonus materials include original drawings, documentaries, Creating the Deadites, which explores the creation and groundbreaking visual effects and alternate endings, deleted scenes, audio commentary with Raimi and Bruce Campbell, and more, even more than that. So,
oh, fuck me.
If you have the Books of the Dead, Evil Dead 1, Evil Dead 2, this is the last one you got to get, and this will complete your collection.
Yeah, everybody's going to get this. Everybody we know will end up getting this. It's an awesome idea for a set.
It is.
Yeah, it's on Blu-ray. And even though that movie is not by any means the best of the series, it is still like one of the better films.
I like it. I mean, yeah. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's a fun movie, and the fact that anybody's doing this, you know, whether it's in the UK, in the US, whatever, finally completing the thing, because I always expected that there would be a third one, because they, you know, Anchor Bay owned the rights for such a long time,
mm-hmm.
released what, at least three or four different releases of Evil, or of Army of Darkness on DVD. They never did come out with this edition. I have no idea why.
I don't either. The only thing I would say about this, though, is that out of all the Evil Dead movies, this one looks the cheapest. like the production values and stuff. So I don't know like if that'd translate over to Blu-ray as well as the other one. I know Evil Dead 2, the new remastered version, looks about as good as anything could possibly look that's that old.
True dat, player.
So,
true dat.
There's that. And then speaking of Evil Dead, let's stay on that and go into this, which was an interesting story here recently too. The idea of an Evil Dead sequel, and it's not under the direction of Sam Raimi, apparently, Award Pictures are planning on pressing ahead with plans to introduce the new sequel, The Evil Dead Consequences, without the involvement of Raimi or his company, Renaissance Pictures. Award's claim is that Renaissance abandoned the Evil Dead trademark, and amongst their evidence is a quote from Raimi published in a book in 2000 wherein he says he would never make another sequel. This, it is being alleged, constitutes abandonment of the trademark.
Oh, bullshit.
The Hollywood Reporter has some smaller print on the legal technicalities, as it were. Right now, Sam Raimi, I think he filed a lawsuit against them for trying to do this, too.
Well, no, he likes doing that.
He certainly does. Says, this potential coming film allegedly is interfering with Raimi's plans to make his own sequel for Sony Pictures and Film District.
Well, well, well.
Do you know, though, like, if that were true, then Rob Zombie would have been fucked, because he said he wasn't ever going to make another sequel, like, to the Halloween movie, and he did. I mean,
right.
You know how many people would be, like, would have lost, like, trademarks over the years and said they were never going to make, like, a sequel or a remake or anything? Almost all
what
of them.
What difference does it make? It's still their fucking franchise. It doesn't matter if they're ever going to fucking make another movie with it or not. They
right.
can say whatever the hell they want to.
Right. That would be like if WWE was like, we're never going to use the gobbledygooker again. And then somebody was like, oh, we're going to use that now. Fuck
yeah,
you.
Yeah, they're going to be on TNA with the gobbledygooker.
It's
it
not
just
gonna
doesn't
work.
Fucking work like that, folks.
No, they created it, so it's theirs.
It's one of the most ridiculous things that I ever fucking heard.
I'm assuming that maybe it's just to get press for that company. Like, they had to know that there was no chance in hell they were actually going to be able to do that.
True that. Something else is ridiculous, though. Hatchet 3, Uncle Bill.
Just fucking
Hatchet 3.
Stop. Would you please fucking stop?
Kane Hodder and Danielle Harris are both set to reprise their roles in the forthcoming sequel. Says Dark Sky Films and Arioscope Pictures. The next entry will be written and produced by Adam Green, but directed by B.J. McDonald, buddy. He's going to bring the series back.
Hell yeah. B.J. and the Bear.
I thought Adam Green said nobody else could make a Hatchet movie but him.
I think he figured out a monkey could make a Hatchet film. That's my only thing I want to say, really, is just, for the love of God, just stop. Like, I think Hatchet 2 proved pretty much everything that we said about Hatchet 1, and any kind of illusion anybody had about those movies being good was shattered there. So
the bottom line is this, too, and I want to make this abundantly clear, folks, abundantly clear. Anybody, I don't give a fuck who you are, opinions are opinions, but if anybody out there worked for a reputable fucking horror news site, supposedly reputable, you start your own goddamn campaigns for, oh, support fucking Hatchet 2 because it's unrated horror and shit, and then you go and also put the movie over. To me, anybody that put Hatchet 2 over as being a great film, you don't have any credibility at all. I mean, I think this is one of the big reasons we started Dead Pit, is because Fangoria did the same goddamn thing years ago.
Year after year.
And they would put, like, fucking, you know, the Fog remake thing on the damn cover, which we'll probably talk about that a little bit later. And it's happening with these horror websites now, like, just to get a quote or something on a fucking DVD. They're going to put Hatchet 2 was awful. I mean, it was truly terrible. There was nothing with Hatchet 1. At least you had some good makeup effects and stuff like that. And it looked like it had a budget. Hatchet 2 looked like me and you out there filming shit. It looked like somebody like, from fucking, ZP International did the makeup effects for fucking Victor Crowley. It was awful. There was nothing at all redeeming about Hatchet 2. It's
now,
horrible.
Now you can imagine another film out, how bad Hatchet 3 is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, it has to be just pure shit.
Fucking, I'm so sick to death.
And really, just the idea of Hatchet pisses me off, too, that people, like, it's still being made, and that the whole tagline for it and everything was it was a return to that kind of horror film and stuff. It never really was, and it's just, it's kind of a fucking shame that it even still exists. And
you know what, though, like, Victor Crowley, I will say this, in the original film, the look of Victor Crowley was fucking, I mean, it was a ripoff of Madman, for one thing, and Madman never got any credit at all. Has been the inspiration and the look of.
Although it clearly was.
Yeah. But goddamn, if you look at Hatchet 2 and look at Victor Crowley in Hatchet 2, it's almost like it would make like a NECA full size bus look like shit. I mean, it would, you know, the NECA full size bus would look way better than what they had in fucking Hatchet 2. I mean, it was so bad. And to me, whenever I hear anybody put a movie like that over, I just don't listen to a goddamn thing you say. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you obviously have no idea what in the fuck is good at all.
I think the best part of Hatchet 2, if there was a saving grace to that movie, was the actual scene where Kane Hodder, like, had a love scene in there and, like, was having...
I mean, I cannot believe how insanely stupid some people are. If they enjoy something like Hatchet 2, I mean, holy shit, how? Is there something out there you don't fucking enjoy if you enjoyed that? But anyway.
You are not talking about Hatchet 2.
This is going to be a rant show because the new story we're going to talk about after the break is going to be legendary.
Yeah, it's just like you're suffering. It's going to be legendary in hell.
It is. So we will be back after this quick commercial break. We have to pay some bills here on DeadPeer.com. You know what, Uncle Bill?
Shut your fucking mouth right now.
No. I want to talk about Fast Custom Shirts.
Holy shit. Well, let's talk about it.
FastCustomShirts.com provides some of the best horror t-shirts I have ever fucking seen.
I don't think that you can really fully appreciate how awesome the t-shirts are over at FastCustomShirts.com until you go over to FastCustomShirts.com and look for yourself.
Yeah. The Hitman T-Shirt Joe. Mm-hmm. The highest quality of shirts that I've actually designed some of, Uncle Bill. He actually lets the fans design some of the shirts for his site. Who else does that? Who else?
Nobody I know of. But when he's not busy playing with Carmen Opposite, he's busy cranking out some of the most high-quality fucking shirts that you're going to find this side of any other damn whore t-shirt maker.
Yeah. So check him out. FastCustomShirts.com. The best there is.
The best there was.
And the best there ever will be.
It's a boot respect.
Hi, this is Fred Decker, director of The Monster Squad and Night of the Creeps, and you're listening to Dead Pit Radio.
Welcome back, folks, here on Dead Pit.
Welcome back, Corner!
So you mentioned it earlier, though. This is the story we're going to lead into the second half of the show.
Holy shit. Holy shit.
It's bound to piss, like, so many people off that it's going to be, like you said, legendary.
Well, first of all, and this is a story you're going to read it here in just a second. This came from Friday the 13th, franchise.com. They actually got this news bid.
So, when I read it, I was like, you know, maybe that's true. Maybe this is true. I don't know. Because things change very rapidly.
Who's to say?
Yeah, they do in this kind of thing. So, let's talk about it, though, which is the idea that Paramount Pictures will not be releasing the Blu-ray disc for the remaining Paramount films in any time in the near future. Says they were told that it's basically a matter of financial viability, and simply put, the studio believes they will not make back enough money to produce Blu-ray discs of the films. Internet piracy, they claim, is the main culprit, and anyone who enjoys downloading the films illegally Much the same way that we got the deluxe edition DVDs and Blu-rays the first time around, a new sequel in the theaters may be the only way that they would ever think about going back and re-releasing any of the Blu-rays. They say a brand new film raises awareness and creates an overall public need for the films on home video. Because, yeah, nothing else does that. One other possible way to get the final chapter, or Jason Takes Manhattan released on Blu, is for a huge critical and financial success of the new Crystal Lake Memories documentary. Personally, I think that's a bunch of bullshit, and they probably just put that in there because they wanted to try to, like, push the agenda of the Crystal Lake Memories documentary, but that's just my own opinion.
Yeah, well, okay. This comes from a fucking company that, okay, they're saying those movies don't make them any money. How come you re-released them fucking, like, five different goddamn times on DVD? Okay, you had the initial single releases back in the late 90s, early 2000s on DVD. You had the From Crystal Lake to Manhattan box set that sucked goddamn dog dick that had two fucking movies on one DVD. Awful piece of shit. You had the deluxe editions, which only the fucking first two or maybe the fourth one had any kind of special features on them at all.
Actually, just the first and fourth one. The second one was kind of like shit on.
Yeah. And maybe the shitty 3D that didn't fucking work on the on the third one, okay? The fucking Mighty Deluxe editions. And then maybe random commentaries on some of the other ones. That was it. Then last year, they come out with the Deluxe Edition box set, which just repackaged all the other fucking...
That's not true. They put a hockey mask in there.
Yeah, they put like a little miniature hockey mask you can put on one of your dollies.
Does it really surprise you, though, like, that they wouldn't be doing that? It doesn't me. I figured they would never release those until another film came out or something came out that they were going to push. It's like, that company has their head so far up their ass about that particular series that they always have. It's like, you should never expect anything anymore out of them. They're never going to appreciate that or actually put anything out for the fans. Even though, out of all the franchises, that's probably the most revered horror franchise out there.
It's definitely the most popular horror franchise ever.
Yeah.
And the thing is, for them to give the excuse that internet piracy is the reason those aren't one of my... That's just stupid. That's just fucking retarded. Because there are... I mean, I don't know how many goddamn copies of that shit that they... I've bought... Well, I have two different versions of pretty much each movie that came out. You know, whether it be the Blu-ray... Deluxe or whatever. And I'm sure fans out there have bought every edition that's ever come out. Who's going to fucking download it and watch it? I don't think that's just fucking bullshit.
You know, the another thing that kills me though, really, and I'm sure over time all this will get rectified, but it is kind of annoying though. All the main series, they only went up to a point in putting these out on Blu-ray. Like Halloween, they put out 1, 2, 3. And then...
Halloween 3's not out yet, actually.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's not out. What am I thinking of? Oh, yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street, they put out 1, 2, and yeah. 3 on the same, like, package thing, whatever. And then they didn't do, like, from that point forward. And then they got Halloween 1 and 2, and they didn't go from that point
Although
forward.
Nightmare on Elm Street is out in a multi...
Yeah, but that's like a UK...
Yeah, but you can release. Still watch it on your Blu-ray player.
And then you got Friday 13th, which is 1, 2... 3
yeah.
on Blu-ray. It's like, that is kind of annoying. If you ever want to see any of the rest of the movies in that series, that's they just...
Well, it just didn't make any sense because, like, when they released those, you know, they released the first three in, like, a little, you know, on the same date, and then they released them on Blu-ray on the same date.
Right.
And then you're like, well, okay, then they're going to, whenever they come out with the next batch of them, then those will be out, too. But no, I mean, I just don't get it. I think Paramount is full of shit. I think that whoever's leading things over there, running things over there, you're not interested. Okay, you're in a business to fucking make money. I guarantee you they are not going to lose money on a Friday the 13th Blu-ray. Do it right. Do a box set for once instead of fucking, you know, coming out with them one by one and then coming out with a box set later. I think the reason that they might think, or whoever's in charge might think they'll lose money is because they fucking quadruple dipped on DVDs for years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the last box set, anybody that wanted the Friday the 13th DVDs, they had bought them the other three or four times they were out, you know. But they don't understand that there's a hardcore fan base out there that's going to buy these over and over and over again and are definitely looking forward to them on the new format that's out there that people have never seen before.
No, they definitely don't understand that, or they seem not to understand that anyway. There really is no sense in bitching about it, but it is one of those things where if you were going to do any series of movies related to horror that would make money, that would be it. It just would. That would be the series that, like, would make the most, that you would sell the most out
of. Aside from the subspecies series.
Well, yeah. And demonic toys, but it's just, it's annoying. It really is. And to me, some of the best movies in all those franchises that were mentioned are some of the later ones that are out on Blu-ray. Like, Halloween 4 and, Friday 13th 5. Like, there's a whole bunch of them that.
Freddy's Dead. I'm looking forward to seeing that in HD.
Jason Takes Ice.
Yeah. So. In other words, if you want to get the best editions, I guess get the deluxe DVDs because the Blu-rays probably don't want to come out for a while.
No.
Because I don't even know what the hell's going on with the DVD, the theatrical Friday the 13th sequel. I mean, I don't even know what the hell's happening. I haven't heard anything about that. It's been like 3 years now since the...
I think that all just died. I think that whole, like, all of those remakes like that, the idea for sequels just fucking died. They just bit the dust.
Aside from Halloween 2, I'm glad they got to come out with that.
Yeah, that got...
Another sequel that's being worked on right now, though, that I'm highly anticipating because the fourth one was just so amazing, is Wrong Turn 5.
Something tells me you're being slightly sarcastic about that, though.
20th Century Fox Home Entertainment has started production on the next installment. The director and writer, Declan O'Brien.
Fuck yeah, Declan!
That's Conan's nephew. Returns to helm, to the helm of his third film in the franchise with Doug Bradley, co-star, best known for his role of Pinhead in Hellraiser. Filming is underway in and near Sofia, Bulgaria, and, is the next chilling chapter of the Wrong Turn, and a small town West Virginia is hosting the legendary Mountain Man Festival on Halloween, which totally sounds legit, by the way.
It sounds
like something that would definitely happen, where throngs of costume partygoers gather for a wild night of music and mischief, but an inbred family of hillbilly cannibals kill all the fun when they trick and treat themselves to a group of visiting college students who are dying for a good time. This film is slated for release on Blu-ray and DVD later this year.
You know what, though? How bad is it that they're fucking going to Bulgaria to simulate West Virginia? We're going to a third world country to make it look like it's West Virginia.
Yeah, because they really don't want to go to the real West Virginia.
No.
Trust me.
Because they what they got playing this movie would probably happen.
If I had the option, I would rather go to Bulgaria. Yes. My opinion.
Oh, Doug Bradley, where is your career gone?
Where has Doug Bradley's career gone?
Shit. Anyway, there's more remake news. Imagine that. The Poltergeist remake. Sam Raimi is set to produce the remake of the 1982 supernatural horror classic at MGM. Like the original, the story focuses on a family whose house is built on a holy site and whose daughter is taken by ghosts.
The story focuses on some fucking retards.
David Lindsay Abaire is working on the script. Raimi is not directing the remake, but he will be in search for a helmer, and it won't matter because it'll suck.
You know, all these news reports talk about people being at the helm. Yeah. And the helmer. They actually use that in, like, sentences.
Yes.
Sam Raimi will not be the helmer of this picture. Doodly-doo.
He'll be the helmer of his balls.
3 remake. Yet another one. Chloe Moretz has provided, she's going to be the new Carrie, by the way. The third one. Actually, kind of the fourth one, if you consider the remake or the sequel.
I do.
Chloe Moretz has provided a little insight into how she's approaching her new iconic role. One part of her research, not conducting any research, Uncle Bill. That's the key. Just diving right into Carrie's head. She's also saying that her version of Carrie White will head to an even deeper, darker, mentally unstable place, similar to where Natalie Portman headed during the psycho thriller Black Swan. So she watched Black Swan in preparation.
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing about it is that worked so well for Malcolm McDowell when he didn't do any research into Dr. Loomis's character in Halloween.
He just completely reinvented the character.
Right. Everybody remember, when I think about Dr. Loomis and that, I think about Malcolm McDowell now.
Yeah, and a brown trench coat.
Yep. I fucking hate all these people.
Oh, it's the Carrie remake. Get excited, folks.
All right, B, excited. B, E, excited. Because the Ring sequel's coming out, too.
That was kind of gay.
It was. Did you like that?
Yes, yes. I fucking liked it, yes. Give me a pom-pom.
The Hollywood Reporter recently caught up with Paramount Film Group President Adam Goodman to talk about all things industry related and about the state of a few projects. He touched on the next Ring sequel and where it could be headed. He says, the thing we're most proud of is that of the three paranormal movies, Jackass 3D, The Devil Inside, and Justin Bieber Never Say Never,
hell yeah,
were all made for $41 million combined, and they have just crossed $1 billion at the global box office. The Ring is something that really lends itself to this format right now, so we're talking to producer Walter Parks about doing something with that. Read between the lines, and it appears Goodman is saying the next Ring could potentially be a found footage film.
Shit, yeah.
Fuck, who cares? God, who cares about any of that shit?
I think they've waited too long to make another Ring movie.
They stick a ring up their ass and shit out of it. I don't care. And who gives a shit?
That'll make their shit all, like, symmetrical.
Do we really need another creepy little Asian girl with hair over her face of a found footage?
I see enough creepy Asian people at Peking.
Mero Yero! How are you today? Mero Yero! Sweet tea! Oh, the Ring.
Opening this weekend, though, Uncle Bill. I'm really excited about this. We should definitely do an on the road for this. Battleship.
You sank my battleship.
I never, ever thought that the awesomeness of Liam Neeson and Rihanna would team up. That's something that I never thought would happen, but I'm excited now.
Oh, God. You know, though, what would be awesome is if that movie bombs, you know that'll be the headline of everything. You sank my battleship.
It's like, one thing I was wondering, though, like, is Rihanna, like, I know she's from Barbados or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Does she not speak English when she sings? Because I can't understand the goddamn word that bitch says.
I don't know. I've never listened to her sing.
She's got, like, this one song. Something like that.
Really? Is that it?
It's like fucking, like.
It's called Pinata Booby Booby De Boo.
It's like, Pinata Booby De Boo.
I have no idea.
She's talking about how Chris Brown beat her up like a pinata. Maybe that's what it was.
I never will understand that shit either. And then she got back together with him like.
Yeah, now everything's fine. Give him a second chance.
And he won a Grammy after that. That's great. Give him a second chance. He just beat the fuck out of some little girl. People are so stupid. DVD Blu-rays for May the 15th and the 22nd.
I would beat the shit out of Rihanna with my dick, though, I've got to say.
Yeah. Would you? You play the drum solo to Moby Dick on her face.
Moby Dick.
The Gray two-disc combo pack.
Speaking of Liam Neeson.
Blu-ray and DVD. Chronicle, the two-disc Blu-ray.
I actually heard that was pretty good.
I did, too. The Devil Inside, which I'll never watch that again, DVD and Blu-ray. Mortuary!
That's the Scorpion
releasing. It is, yeah, not Toby Hooper's Mortuary. The Woman in Black is coming out on Blu-ray.
That's a remake.
Serbian film. Really?
Yep, a Serbian film.
Ilsa the Wicked Warden and WWE The Best of WCW Clash of the Champions Blu-ray. You're probably going to get that, aren't you?
I might at some point.
You should. And that's all for the May 15th and 26th.
That's it for the news and the DVD releases and all that good stuff. When we come back, though, folks, we're going to be talking about the 10 worst remakes of all time.
You're the worst around. None of them are going to keep it down because you're the worst around. None of them are going to keep you down.
DeadPit.com.
The legend of Frankenstein once again brings terror and nightmare to the screen in Lady Frankenstein. Joseph Cotten is Baron Frankenstein.
But his face!
Devil with his face, I don't care what he looks like. I want him to live.
Sarah Bay is Lady Frankenstein.
That is what they call your father's life's work, a monster, and they're right.
They are not right!
She's beautiful, she's evil, and she'll do anything for love.
Would you like to have my body bend to you? Would you like to make love to me?
She creates a new, more terrifying monster. And only the monster she creates can satisfy her strange desires. Using her beauty and her scalpel, she cuts deeply into men's hearts.
Yes, you're right. Kill it.
There has never been a movie like Lady Frankenstein. Rated R.
And you're rocking out and listening to Dead Pit Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Dead Pit Radio.
Hi.
How's everybody doing out there?
I was doing okay until we have to do this list. That's going to depress me now.
Yeah, this is, we both actually kind of decided that we would pick and choose and, listen to each other's arguments and actually just come up with one list.
Mm-hmm. Instead of both having like two different 10 film lists, we've combined our efforts and selected what could be only described as the ultimate bad remake list.
And something that we did stay away from a little bit on this list is the direct-to-DVD remakes and just stuff that really wasn't, released widely. I mean, the only one that I can see on here is maybe one, just because it was made from a classic film for sure, but goddamn, I mean, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, so, keep in mind too that the reason why we try to stay away from the direct DVD releases is because they don't have as many possibilities. They don't have a big budget. They don't have like as many resources as the theatrical remakes do. So these are ones that failed spectacularly on like a bunch of different levels that had a lot of money in them too.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go from 10 to 1.
Right.
And do it proper, by God. And there is actually, we count two movies as one in one of these two, but you'll...
Yeah, and number 10, the very first one we're going to talk about on here, may be the most controversial one on the list.
Right.
Except for maybe the first one, but...
but hey, it's Dead Pit. We're controversial.
In my mind, it actually should be on this list, too, really.
I think it should.
And that is one of the very first batch of these new remakes that we saw, too. This was the Hills Have Eyes remake.
Yeah. And, I mean, we came here from not including this, but the thing is, with me, the original Hills Have Eyes is just such a gritty, scary looking movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks like the family and stuff that are in it, they look like somebody that could fucking kill you. They look terrifying.
It's a bare bones kind of like minimalist film that was in the vein of Last House on the Left and those really kind of dirty, grimy movies that made you feel kind of sleazy. And it was just like, for instance, Michael Berryman was just a guy that they found that had like that particular look. He wasn't decked out in like tons of makeup. As a matter of fact, there was very little makeup in this movie at all. It actually seemed like something that could happen.
Yeah.
And you fast forward to this, in 2006, this fucking movie,
right,
where everybody in it looks like they were in fucking Marvel Comics or something. It was fucking stupid.
Yeah, like all the mutants in the movie just looked too ridiculous to even believe. So the scare factor, or getting any kind of terror from a movie like this, it just goes right out the window because the makeup effects, for one thing, I know K&B did them, but they're awful.
They are.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that Greg Nicotero, his team probably did this. I don't think he could do anything this bad looking.
Well, you talk about a mismatch of styles too, though, because it's like Aja was trying to go for like a really realistic kind of high tension atmosphere, and then you got those fucking things in it. It's like you got one that looks like a hammerhead shark walking around. It's
one of those weird things too, because the original Hills Have Eyes, there's not a huge fan base really, like as far as mainstream goes. But this movie made a lot of money at the box office. It did really well, as I remember.
Well, this was early enough to where they were all doing really well, the ones that came out, and people were not yet.
And then, like, this is one that's kind of split on a lot of people, and usually, I've noticed this. Usually the people that love the original Hills Have Eyes and get what that movie was, they're not a fan of this. And it's usually the younger, I don't want to say kids, but like in the early 20s, mid-20s, that really put over Hills Have Eyes, the remake, as this amazing horror movie. And it's really not. I mean, in this one, I've only seen it one time. I never had the desire to go back and watch it again. When we saw it in a theater, that was the only time I've seen it. And I remember just the whole explanation of, this was like, they were testing nuclear bombs or whatever the hell it was, and it deformed this whole race of people and shit. From what I remember, they never really talked about that shit at all in the original Hills Have Eyes. Okay?
No.
They don't give you, you don't need a reason as to why these people are there. Who fucking cares? They're a crazy, inbred, possibly, family that live in the fucking woods, live in the hills. You know, they're special mountain folk or desert folk or whatever the hell you want to call it. You don't need this whole backstory. Oh, they live the nuclear test sites, blah, 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 blah. They all look like fucking blobs of latex and shit.
Yeah, very, very disappointing film and very slick looking, and I guess that was my biggest problem with it, too, is that, I had a couple problems with it. First being that it came right after one of the best horror films that would come out in probably the last 20 years, which was High Tension, the guy that directed that.
Yeah.
And
it seems like he hasn't done anything but
remakes. No, and that was his follow-up to it, and it was just like, really? That was like...
His follow-up to this one was Mirrors, which isn't on this list, but it's just as shitty, maybe shittier.
Yeah. So... Ultimately, I'd say that this movie, out of every one of them on this list, actually probably has the only redeeming scene in it that I can think of any of them, which I actually thought the way that they did the camper scene was one of the only good scenes in any of these remakes. It actually stands out in my mind.
I would be open to actually going back and watching this movie again. I don't own it. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I actually own the sequel to the remake, which I actually think is a whole different kind of turd. It's kind of enjoyable.
Yeah, it is enjoyable, though, because they really tried to make something that was awful. Like, I'm convinced that that movie wasn't ever meant to be taken seriously, unlike the first one, which was meant to be taken seriously, but came across, like, just goofy as hell.
Yeah. Although, a lot of these movies, too, I would never really, I probably haven't rewatched hardly any of them. actually.
No. Well, I haven't rewatched a whole lot of remakes ever, period. Like, unless it was...
Yeah, even the ones that I've liked. I don't think I've had a big desire to rewatch them. But continuing on, because we do have 10 of these to talk about. And this one I don't think we'll have a whole lot to say about, so it probably won't take too long. But I do remember this one just... I mean, it seems like around this time period, there was a whole bunch of these teeny bopper, you know, high school kid slasher movies, which weren't really slasher movies. They were kind of just, I don't even know what the hell they were, but you get the idea when I tell you that I got two words for you, Prom Night from 2008.
Now this, here's my argument about Prom Night though. To me, the original Prom Night wasn't a very good film. Like, they really had an opportunity to do something with this film that would have been slightly different, but they didn't. As a matter of fact, they actually did the impossible by taking a film that was already bad and making it even worse by adding, like, really incredibly lame characters, like 15 fucking endings to a movie that didn't need to, like, even have two endings. It just needed to end. And just... The whole horrible thing of the guy that's stalking her and all that stuff. Do you remember that?
It's like, the guy from That Thing You Do with a baseball cap. Like, that's the thing I was like, God damn it. Boy, when's it going to start singing? You do those things you do. Where's Tom Hanks when you need him? Cause I got a ball cap in this shitty movie. God damn. I saw it. I was like, that's the fucking killer, that fucking guy from That Thing You Do in the ball cap.
Yeah, the only worst killer was in Final Exam. Guy just shows up.
I don't
up.
Even know if that guy's the worst killer.
It's the janitor. Fuck.
He basically, Prom Night is like fucking Tim stalking and killing somebody.
It is. Which I can actually see that happening someday, too, but that's another story for another day. Yeah, It's an awful film just because it's over-stylized again, and like it's clearly made for like a teenage crowd of people that don't have any clue.
Maybe preteen too, because like it's a slasher movie with no slashing at all. I mean, as far as the gore factor or anything remotely bloody, it's not happening in Prom Night.
Talk about awful storyline too. Oh my God, the whole thing with
him. I don't even really remember the storyline. Other than the obvious, you know.
But it's Prom Night, somebody's gonna fucking die! I do remember that movie, when it came out, there was a direct DVD remake of April Fool's Day.
Right.
That came out right at this, and it was exactly
like the same
thing. Yeah. And actually, the April Fool's Day remake might have been a little bit worse, but since it was direct to DVD.
And another one that looked the same too was Sorority Row.
Yeah, it did. Oh, God.
And another one, I guess, that we're not talking about on here too, When a Stranger Calls. It's the same sort of fucking thing.
And they're all fucking awful.
They all got these, like, fucking 85-pound airhead bitches in them. It's like the bitch from When a Stranger Calls. All the movie is like her looking around, and then the phone rings. She's like,
"Hello? Hello? Who's this?"
That's it.
Get the phone.
So by the end of the movie, you're begging for somebody to kill that fucking bitch. At least I was.
I'm begging for somebody to kill all these people in this movie, though. And all these.
Yeah. So it was Prom Night from 2008. Which I actually like the original Prom Night. I mean, I know it's not a great movie or anything, but I've always kind of enjoyed that movie.
Some people do. I don't know. I just never got into it. So, the next one on our list probably might come as a shock to some people because it's not as new as the other ones on the list either. But it is certainly deserving to be on here. It came out in 1999, and this is the remake of The Haunting.
Yeah,
I saw this movie in theaters too. This is before we even thought about doing this show.
Oh, really?
And I just remember, even at that time, seeing that movie in theaters, I was like, what the fuck? What a piece of shit. Because the original Haunting, although it's not one of my favorite films or anything by any stretch of the imagination.
Very low budget movie.
Yes, and had very, very simple design to it. Very effective film. And the woman in the film couldn't figure out if she was going crazy or if she was actually seeing all this stuff. It's very, very haunting for the name of the title film.
Well, it's something and then, interesting for the viewer, like where you're kind of thinking too, like what's really going on here, you know?
Right.
But not really with the remake.
And you fast forward to the 99 version. First of all, horribly miscast. The lead actress, Amanda Plummer, does not know. It just doesn't work. Like, she's supposed to be somebody that's losing her mind and doesn't know if what she's seeing is reality or if it's not reality. But it was just, it wasn't, she never really embodied the character, and she always just looked odd playing it. She just did. And then
I think you're thinking of somebody else. I don't think it was Amanda Plummer.
No, you're right. It wasn't Amanda Plummer. It was
what was the girl's name? I'm looking it up right now. Just continue on, though, because you got me confused. Lily Taylor was a girl.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right.
She's actually in some pretty good movies.
I get those two mixed up a lot, actually, because they look basically the same. But then you got that girl who I'm guessing the studio decided, okay, if we've got her as our lead, we need to surround her with, like, the name actors of that time, who just happened to be horrible actors and actresses.
Catherine
Zeta-Jones.
Owen Wilson. It's a shame that he failed in killing himself.
Liam Neeson, who has been in some great films since then, but like at that time he was just taking whatever the fuck was going around at that time. And you get that all together, and you got some horrible CG that looks like ass today, and...
I was thinking about that. Like, I haven't seen that movie in probably 10 years.
It's god-awful, the CG.
What if they ever come out with it on Blu-ray? Look at that shit. I remember, like, that was the first movie that I think I had ever seen with Owen Wilson in it. I remember this because... I was like, who the fuck is this guy? I mean, he's awful, like, just because he's a horrible actor. And a year or two later, he was in a ton of shit. Like, he become, like, a huge star. And it was in a lot of these buddy comedies with Vince Vaughn, who's another piece of shit we'll be talking about here in a little bit.
Right. It's a little heads up for you there, too.
A little heads up for you there.
But, yeah, and this one, isn't Liam Neeson like a psychiatrist or something like that? Or
He's taking all these people with different types of fears.
Right, into this house. It's not good. As a matter of fact, it's really, really, and there was film coming out around that time, like Rose Red and stuff, that were very similar, but actually executed much better. And that movie had all the money in the world behind it, and it was shit.
Another one that was done really well that I liked a lot at the time, I think it was the same year, was Stir of Echoes. And I thought that was a big...
Well, that's like night and day. That, yeah, I mean, those two movies, you couldn't even put them in the same class. That movie was really, Stir of Echoes was really well acted, really well directed.
And it had like a big twist, too, that you didn't really...
Yeah.
Nobody caught that.
Yeah, and then you go to this one, it's like... All the crap Hollywood cliches you can throw into a film, and they try to make it. Here's the real problem of what happened, I think, too. They tried to make it into like a summer blockbuster by having shit happen, and that just completely missed the point of the original film. Like,
I don't remember. Like, was the movie a success? Like, I don't even remember.
Honestly, I don't know either.
Yeah. Anyway. Actually, the same year, too, was I think you kind of like the movie, but it's not on the list, but it kind of goes hand in hand with this, so we'll mention it, is the House on Haunted Hill remake.
Yeah, there are parts of that movie that I do like, and ultimately it failed.
I couldn't even get through that
film.
Movie, now, to be honest with you. I never did watch it all the way through.
It's kind of similar to The Haunting, though, because just the way that the characters are set up, and there's too many characters. And
any feature-length movie starring Chris Kattan always sucks. I figured that out.
It didn't really star Chris Kattan,
well,
he was in it, at least.
Aside from Corky Romano, of course.
Right. And Night at the Roxbury. So,
I'm
going to move on to number
that
7.
That is The Haunting. Number 7 is actually a more recent remake, which, you know, there's a lot of things to hate about this. Number one being that it was just boring. There was nothing going on when I watched Fright Night, and that's what we're talking about, from last year with Colin Farrell. Well, fucking Colin Farrell, really?
Saw this movie in the theater.
I saw it on Blu-ray, and I'm still pissed off.
And we saw it in a really, really nice theater, too. And the whole time that I was sitting there watching it, I was just like, this, I just want to leave. I really, really want to leave. Because it's the most, like, glamorized, nothing going on bullshit remake. One of the worst for that, yeah. Too. Like, it's boring. It's ultimately, like, that's the biggest problem with it to me. It's just fucking flat out a boring film.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing. The only time anything happens, like, action-wise or anything, is like the last 15 fucking minutes of the movie.
And it's just ridiculous, too. The end of the movie is fucking ridiculous. Yeah. Like, the whole idea behind it is just stupid anyway.
And goddamn, I mean, I am sick to death seeing that fucking kid, that McLovin kid.
Right.
He's
only in it. That's the thing. The Evil Ed character was in the first Fright Night like the sidekick guy. You know, he was in it through the whole thing, and he was teaching Charlie about the vampires. In this movie, he's kind of like, he tried to do that for about the first 2 minutes, then he disappears, and then he comes back like briefly towards the end. Why? Where did he go? What happened? You'll never fucking know.
Also,
it doesn't really matter.
Something else that bothered me too is Brewster is supposed to be kind of a nerd, okay? And he is. He is kind of even in the remake, right? The problem is his girlfriend is like a fucking model.
Right.
And it's just totally unbelievable. I just didn't believe that for a second, that a girl that looked like that would be fucking that motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The whole movie is just, you have to suspend your belief anyway, like going into movies,
yeah.
Period. But you can't get into this movie because none of it even seems remotely connected to reality at all.
That's right. Because like in the original Fright Night, you know, the house was, it could have been anywhere in the United States.
Yeah.
Any suburban neighborhood in the United States.
And in this one, it's like in the middle of a fucking desert.
Yeah. There's somewhere in Las Vegas in a desert.
There's like it's like a housing complex. So there's only like, what, 100 houses in the middle of like this giant desert. And they're all like, they all live there. And it's just so, that backdrop is what represents the movie to me. It's just drab and blank and no character to the film whatsoever. It's just there.
Yeah.
And then when you meet the, Peter Vincent character, I mean, he to me was the only decent thing about the movie, but he's not in the movie that long. And it's kind of like him trying to save the movie is not going to hold the whole thing together.
Yeah. And he's like basically Chris Angel. Is what he is in this. He's not really a horror host or anything.
Nobody knows what a hell of a horror host is now, except for people
that,
you know. But just a damn abomination. And another one of those films, too, where people, when it came out, were like, oh, I didn't think it was that bad.
Really? I know. I just can't get these people. Like, are these people that I was talking about years ago on the show, at birth, their mother just started feeding them shit? And now, I guess as they get older, they just enjoy the taste of shit or something.
I guess. I mean, I don't know what your criteria is for a movie to be bad, but this, like, meets all of the criteria.
Above anything else, all the gripes about all the, it's not believable casting or, you know, or location or anything else, it is boring. There's just nothing fucking happening in it.
It is, and you can't relate to it. Like, there's no, nobody in the United States, except maybe somebody that lives in Arizona, will ever be able to relate to anything in this movie.
Throughout the whole movie, it's just these kids walking on the street or walking in fucking high school. I mean, that's it. Like, and in the end, there's like a 15-minute battle with fucking, you know, Colin Farrell as a vampire. And that's it. And then, like, when the sun hits him, it's like a fucking bomb goes off or something. A bomb of CG shit.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, that we don't even have really time to get into is the CG in that movie, because It wasn't great either.
Fright Night, seventh worst remake of all time, which, yeah, we're going to be talking about some shit dipped in shit and sprinkled with fucking AIDS semen here or something here in a minute. These next four we got.
So in 1985, George A. Romero made The Darkest Day of Horror that the world has ever known. And then in 2008, somebody's asshole made The Darkest Piece of Shit that the world has ever cracked. Because that's the Day of the Dead remake. Man, what in the fuck was going on?
Well, for one thing, we knew something was up because this movie was delayed for like 3 or 4 years from ever coming out. Like, it was made.
That gives me hope that somebody actually knew, like, oh my God.
I think it was made like 3 years before it ever came out. So, because remember, like, I think the first Dead Pit show, or the first one we ever did with the news topic, we were talking about it. So that was at least 2 or 3 years before it actually came out in 2008.
Yeah.
So.
And really, though.
I think they wanted it to be a theatrical movie, but it ended up being direct-to-video.
And if you think about it, there's only really two reasons why movies don't come out theatrically right when they're made. Number one is they can't figure out who to market it to. Or number two is, it's just so fucking bad that they're like, we don't have any idea what to do with it. And
or
that
could be
was
a little bit of both.
And that was like this.
Yeah. I mean, there he is small, very small. I think I only names is the only thing that this one really has in common with the Romero film. You've got, let's see, I think the character Lori is played by Mina Suvari.
Yeah.
Right. You've got Bub, which is, or maybe they called him Bud. Maybe they changed it to Bud. Was that it?
It doesn't matter. I think they did, but who cares?
Yeah. Who was Ving Rhames? Like, what was his name in the movie?
I think he was Rhodes.
Was he Rhodes?
Yeah.
But, like, none of them really had similar characters. Like, they were just, okay, we're going to name him Rhodes or whatever.
It was a generic, like, band of army guys or whatever in this. Like,
Wasn't Nick, what was his name when he in it?
Nick. Oh, Cannon?
Nick
Cannon,
yeah.
Yeah, he was.
That says movie star right there for you.
But, man, there's so many unforgivable sins about this movie that I don't even really know which one to, like, concentrate
on. I don't
even
really remember much about it. I just remember, like, it just looked cheaper than fuck.
It was a glorified sci-fi movie. It's like
It looked like a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, it would have been made for sci-fi. And it was right around the time that, I guess, Ving Rhames was accepting anything to do, and he went through that whole period and still kind of going through that whole period. He had some success with the Dawn of the Dead remake, so he's, you know, doing this shit.
Right.
But this is nothing like the Dawn of the Dead remake. There's no real style to it. It's a big clusterfuck. It's a group of army guys, and they, like, going out, and it doesn't bear any resemblance.
Seems like most of the time when army guys, aside from the original Day of the Dead, if you see zombies and army men, the movie's going to be guaranteed to be shitty.
Right. And the part of it that I guess they were trying to make, Steve Miner thought he would make some sort of political or social commentary or something, was where Bud or Bub or whatever was a fucking vegetarian, and so, like, he wouldn't eat people or whatever. He wouldn't eat, like,
oh God.
Doesn't anybody approve these scripts? Like, if you saw something like that, if you were just like a common guy, you never even seen Day
of
the Dead,
of a vegetarian zombie,
and you saw that and somebody had written that down as a character, wouldn't you immediately be like, that's fucking dumb.
But not with these guys. They thought it was a good idea.
They were like, wow, that's edgy.
That's big. That's great.
That's deep.
That's why I think, like, a lot of people in the horror convention community don't really like us, because we're the voice of reason in a world of fucking insanity.
That's that good.
We're like one of the only, like, websites or shows or anything that is going to be 100% fucking honest with you.
But unlike Fright Night, I don't think I ever heard anybody say they liked this movie, though.
Probably not.
I don't think one person.
You
got
to remember, too, the Doodleson and Anna Clavel were the producers on this, too.
Yeah.
The masterminds behind Creepshow 3.
Oh.
And Horror 101 and Horror 102.
Fuck. So that's Day of the
Nick
Dead.
Nick Cannon was great in it, though. We'll give him credit.
Oh.
He's a lucky man getting to
bathe
Mariah Carey's ass.
Yeah, he is. We're really getting into the nitty-gritty now with the top five. We're moving into the top five. So
I actually think this one might deserve to be a little higher because it's...
Well, it's got stiff competition. It really does.
Man, I remember when we did our drunken commentary for this, and I highly recommend everybody go check that out. We were drunk off our goddamn asses, man. We might have been the most drunk we ever were for a commentary because we were stupid enough. We did this commentary after we did the hostile drunken commentary.
So we were already...
Did we do for the hostile drunken commentary for the first 20 minutes, Uncle Bill? Do you remember?
Shots. We did shots, didn't we?
Every time we saw any type of brutality, we would take a shot.
That was a horrible idea.
Every time we would see a titty, we would take a shot.
Right.
And every time we would hear some foul language, we would take a shot.
So
we were going to be like dead if we kept this up. So we only did this for probably the first 20 minutes, but we did continue drinking. And I just remember, like, still being amazed, even though I didn't know what in the fuck was going on. I didn't know if I was pissing or shitting myself at how unbelievably shitty this movie still was. Sometimes you can watch movies and get a different type of enjoyment out of them when you're drinking or when you're intoxicated in some way. Not this one, man. I don't know if you remember that.
Well, there's really not a whole lot to make fun of because this movie drags ass so much. That's the thing I remember. It's just, there's so much melodrama like throughout the movie that doesn't go anywhere and you don't give a shit about that. It's not even a fun film to try to sit through and do a drunken commentary over anything. It's just, you're just like, golly, there's nothing going on in this fucking movie. Like, I gotta sit here for 90 minutes while this goes on. And we saw it in the theater, man. I remember that clearly.
Yeah.
Like,
we were like, two of three people that was in that theater that night.
And it just blew my mind how shitty it was even when we saw it in the theater. I couldn't even believe it. It's the only film I really like almost walked out on. Like one of the only ones anyway. Where I was just, and you knew right by the middle
we
of
it. We never did say the name of
it. Oh, The Fog. Yeah, I thought we did.
I don't think we did. We were talking about The Fog remake.
Yeah.
People were like, what the fuck? What the hell are you talking about? Which one?
But no, I only through in the middle of this film really thought about getting up and walking out. This is one of the only ones because you just knew it wasn't getting any better. There was nothing saving it because the characters were awful, and they got Selma Blair was Stevie in the film that played Adrian Barbeau's part.
What was the Tom Welling?
Right,
he was just the Tom character, Tom Atkins, I guess,
and. The part that always killed me is that the ghost, it looked like a fucking Disney film. It looked like something came out like...
It did, the Haunted Mansion.
The Haunted Mansion film, yeah. And you're just like...
they're not... I guess they were trying for the ghost to be scary. I mean, I think. But they just looked like so laughable. Like there was the one character that was just running from the ghost in the graveyard or whatever. And I remember like, wow, I mean, that looks like something that you'd laugh at rather than like something seriously scary.
Yeah, and whereas too with the Adrian Barbeau character in the first one, you had a character there that was like, had a lot of depth and she played that character really well and she had like a family backdrop and like a side story going on and all this stuff was going on in this movie. Like she just showed up a little every now and then like,
When we were interviewing Adrian Barbeau, I was like, well, did you have any experience in radio? Because she's got that nice, like sensual type voice that sounds like somebody that could be on the radio.
Yeah.
Right? Selma Blair's like, oh, hello, Antonio Bay! This is Stevie Wayne here! Stevie Wayne! You're gonna play some fucking Cypher Fighting here! Some fucking airhead cunt talking on the fucking radio.
So basically, you didn't like her radio voice?
No. Also, something else I remember, what in the hell was that shitty ass band's name? It was popular at the time and you never heard up from them again.
Were they in it?
I think that they had a song in it that was like featured in it. I don't think.
Was it Fall Out Boy?
It was Fall Out Boy. That's who it was.
That's the Fall Out Boy here, Stevie Wayne, Antonio Barry. radio!
And see, I don't even remember that being in the movie, but I just know that was a shitty band that was around that time.
It was. It was Fall Out Boy. That was who it was, I believe. The Fog is like...
It's a disgraceful film that really, like... You know, it took everything about the original, the pacing and the suspense, and, like, turned it into a kid's cartoon that was just so fucking meaningless. And then,
a shitty kid's cartoon.
Oh, God.
Makes fucking Chuck Norris's Karate Commandos look good.
It does. It makes it look like a damn masterpiece.
Because at least Chuck Norris would teach you life lessons at the end of the fucking show. You never learned anything aside from getting money stole from you after you watch this piece of shit.
But to whereas the Fog remake really hinged on the ability to create atmosphere and mood, the next film, the next remake we're talking about, really hinged on one person's performance. And unfortunately, the person that they picked to play that performance was fucking Vince Vaughn. And why that is, I'll never know. But this is the Psycho remake in at number 4.
Yep. Gus Van Sant. What was the movie he had a big success at the time, like right before that? Which one was it?
Wasn't it Twister? Didn't he do Twister?
No, I don't think he did Twister. He did, wasn't it Good Will Hunting or something like that?
He did that. Who the fuck did, that's Paul Verhoeven, wasn't it? Who did Twister?
Fuck, I don't know. Fuck Twister.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know what movie.
There was some big movie that came out that Gus Van Sant had like a big, you know, hit on his hands or whatever, and they let him.
He did. Did he do Good Will Hunting? Maybe.
God damn it, I won't look it up.
Yeah, we should have probably prepared for that. But then again, I don't really follow Gus Van Sant's career.
I don't either. I think it is Good Will Hunting, but I'll check and make sure.
How do you like them apples? Look it up.
I'm looking it up right now. Sorry, folks.
We can edit.
It was Good Will Hunting. I'm right.
Way to go, Bubsy. Way to go.
I've never actually seen that movie, though.
Really?
No. Is it any count?
It is actually a pretty good film, yeah.
Is it count?
It's count. It's not there you count.
I say that should be the thing. That movie's count, man.
But this movie, Psycho Remake, is not there you count.
Ain't there you count, this one. Okay.
It's, okay. They actually promoted this film on the idea that it's a shot for shot remake of the original Psycho. And that was the gimmick.
Because Gus Van Sant wanted to know what Psycho would look like in color with really shitty actors.
And he found out.
Yeah, so this is what we got. Oh man, okay, one thing. Anne Heche, I could deal with her. She's a good looking girl. She was. I don't know what she looks like now.
I think she's a horrible actress. I swear to you, I do.
I don't think she needed to be a great actress because it didn't depend on her, okay?
No.
Where the fuck did he find Vince Vaughn, is what I want to know. Vince Vaughn is awful. I've hated Vince Vaughn longer than I've fucking, like, hated most things on Earth, I gotta say. And this movie is what kickstarted it. I don't think I've ever seen a Vince Vaughn movie that was, for one thing, good. For another thing, that he did a good job on it.
I don't understand either, like, that idea, because Vince Vaughn, as everybody knows, is primarily cast in comedy roles.
Yeah, and he's not funny in those. Unless, like,
but that's his bread and butter. That's the thing that, like, actually made him famous.
Yeah, but this was before that.
I think, though, that around this time, I don't know if you, what year did this movie come out?
98.
98. I think around this time, though, he was making some of those films with Jon Favreau, like Swingers and shit like that. So that's quite a stretch.
It's not really a mainstream. He wasn't a mainstream star.
No, but I mean, that's quite a stretch to play a character like that when you're making those kind of lighthearted fucking films of that nature.
Yeah.
And that's not even taken into consideration the fact it didn't matter who he got. It didn't matter who the fuck he got. Nobody was going to play that role any better.
Right.
Than,
well, especially if
Anthony
you want
Burns.
If you want a carbon copy of the original movie and you're not going to update it in any way, you're not going to change any fucking thing about it. What is the point in that? Because you got a director that's possibly one of the best, if not the best, filmmakers of all time in Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And you're arrogant enough to think, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to copy it and it's going to be updated just with new actors and in color.
But if this movie proved anything, though, it proved that people will just watch recycled films. Like, they'll just watch, just on the idea that you remade an older film now, they will watch it, even though there's really nothing redeeming about that idea at all.
What I think is funny, though, and of all the remakes, I think this is the one that is seemingly like it was never made. I mean, it's kind of went away. Nobody really talks about this one anymore. And I think there's good reason, because, like, the thing is, movies are classics because not only the story of the movie, but especially with a movie like Psycho, it's not the same if you don't have the guy that made the movie. And, well, there's a couple guys that made the movie, but the guy that made the movie on camera, Anthony Perkins. And you'll see in the next, we got at least one other movie I want to talk about on here, that we're going to talk about, where, okay, you can remake movies and they can probably work, you know, if you've got somebody that has no personality to them at all, you know. Anthony Perkins created, and he will always be known, and, you know, while he was alive, I don't think he liked the fact that he would always be known as Norman Bates. And when you take anybody, like you were saying, somebody new in there, it's not him, and it's never going to be him, and they're going to remake it again. Well, not exactly, but they probably will. But right now they're working on the making of Psycho, which is like a Alfred Hitchcock biopic. And whoever they got there, yeah, he might look like him, but it's not going to work. I mean, when somebody creates a character like that, it's just, you can't, nobody can reinvent that character and make it work.
Right. It's the same thing, like, okay, technically, I mean, I play guitar, I can play some Metallica songs, I can play some Metallica songs all the way through, which means I can make a rough approximation of Metallica. Right. But now, do you want to come see me fucking play Metallica songs? No. You want to go see Metallica play Metallica songs. It's the same thing. Like, why the hell would you want to, like, watch me play their songs when you could actually just go watch them? It's, why the fuck would you want to sit through this movie when you can, like, well, just watch Psycho?
Another musical reference is kind of like Kiss, when they've got Tommy Thayer and fucking Eric Singer or somebody else placing the original members of, you know, you're not going to hear fucking Eric Singer sing Black Diamond, because he fucking can't.
Well, he can, but it doesn't sound like.
Well, yeah, he can. It sounds like shit. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, yeah, Psycho. Thanks a lot for introducing that concept, Psycho.
Piece of shit. So the next, we actually got two for number three.
Well, they're kind of
in the same franchise, yeah, I guess. Which a lot of people would probably think we would have this one at number one. But
we debated this, though, quite a bit, and it just got down to number three, and it is
Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween, and Halloween 2, which, to be honest with you, man, I gotta admit, Rob Zombie's Halloween, the first movie, the prequel part, okay, was watchable. Going back on it now, looking at it now. I think
it's fucking stupid. Like, when I go back and watch it, I'm just, the dialogue.
Well, you gotta, that's a fucking Rob Zombie, though. But what I'm saying is, okay, I think you could have done an entire movie on just a prequel of what happened, okay? But then you go and you fucking start remaking John Carpenter's Halloween, and you start failing miserably on every fucking level. I mean, goddamn, you could start with the three fucking girls. There's no chemistry there at all between them. No. I mean, you don't believe any of those three are friends. You believe they fucking met that same day, and they're just acting out parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing that works between them. Just my opinion.
And then at the end, you've got the big anticlimactic chase sequence where they're going through the house and up and down all the dry walls and all that stuff, and you're just like, what you talk about anti-suspense, you just don't even give a shit. Yeah. There's so much confusing stuff going on.
And the last scene, too, like, it's so goddamn dark, you can't even see what the hell's going on anyway.
No, but even more so is that this, like, film, and this and the number one film were those type of films where they, somewhere along the way, Hollywood decided it would be a really good idea to go back and give all these people backstories. And that is the thing that, like, gives me nightmares at night when I think about the type of movies that I hate. It's the type of movies where they're like, all right, you remember how, like, all this stuff, really cool stuff happened in the films that you love? Well, now we're going to go and show you how everybody got to be the way that they are, and nobody wants to know that, or at least I don't want to know that. Like, yeah. I don't give a shit. And it's like, when you do that, it takes away, like, all of the intrigue about the film, and it just makes them, especially if Rob Zombie's doing it, it makes them look just stupid. Like, all the characters are just white trash, like, idiots that he turned into that because his dad or his stepdad was abusive and his mom was a stripper. It's like, no. That didn't have anything at all to do with any of that.
The original one, I mean, you don't really... and the thing is, I can understand because, okay, how much have we heard about Michael Myers? The sequels alone, they've told us everything possible. It's the Curse of Thorn, whatever, you know. So there's only so much, I guess, you could do if you want to continue making a Halloween movie. So, you know... It is what it is. I think that you can definitely tell by the second Halloween that Rob Zombie, in my opinion, I was told this. I don't know if this is fact or not. I think Rob Zombie purposely in Halloween 2 tried to make the shittiest movie.
I do, too. Actually, was going to bring that up, too. Yeah. I think that was like a big fuck you to like the studio for making him do that film.
And what's even funnier is there's now like a cult following for Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, where there's people out there.
In a way, I think that's more understandable than having a cult following for the first one, because at least in the first one, he was really trying to make something good.
Right.
And it just didn't work. And in the second one, it's just like he was like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just put as much like stupid and bizarre shit in this film as I can like think to put in there and not make it anywhere near marketable or like anything. And he did it. So, I can kind of see how people would latch onto that because he was being so outside of the box that it's like kind of, you can kind of see how people would find that to be a cult film. But the first one is just a train wreck. It's just like a disaster on all levels where he was just trying to like do everything to please everybody and none of it worked.
Something else that like there was a big uproar, is the casting of, Michael Myers in those movies, Tyler Mane,
yeah.
Who's like 7 foot tall, Michael Myers. It's never, you know, Michael Myers is just a normal sized guy before, and this one he's like a fucking giant.
It just goes to show you like how much he missed the point of the original, which, you know, the point of the original was he could be anybody.
Right.
He could be anything. He took on. He was in. Average. He was just an average thing.
Yeah. It's and like, then, you know, the wandering the streets on Halloween night. You know, he kind of fits in with anybody. He's got the mask on. He's just walking around. You know, they don't know who he is, where he is.
Right. But in this one, it's kind of hard to miss a 7 foot tall, like, mongoloid fucking guy that's, like, walking around. And I remember reading an interview where he was like, yeah, you really, or he's more like, yeah, you really believe that he can kill people, yeah. It's like,
Yeah,
I mean, I believe he could kill people, but I believe that the original Michael Myers could kill people, too.
There's so much stupid shit in that one, too, like, where, I mean, this just makes no sense at all, where these guys at the mental home, I think it's Courtney Gaines and Lou Temple,
right?
They take this girl and decide to fuck her in Michael Myers' room.
For no reason. For no fucking reason, just so they can have two more death scenes.
It reminds me like so stupid. We're gonna go fuck her in this room with this big son of a bitch. Crazy.
It reminded me of the scene in Friday 5 where the Vinny character shows up. It's like they just show up just so they can get killed, and that was the same thing. Like it didn't make any sense.
So, I mean, it's a shame that like over such a short period of time, like less than a 10-year period. that there were so many remakes. I mean, most of these all came out within 10 years that mm-hmm. we've talked about.
I know. And in we've talked about all these movies, these next two movies, like ad nauseum probably, but there's a lot of, in a lot of ways, the first Halloween movie was very divisive because there was actually a lot of people that got on the Rob Zombie camp on that yeah. and said it was great. But I never ever heard anybody get behind the number two film that we're talking about here. Nobody. Never heard one single fucking person.
I don't think I have either.
Say that they thought it was even anywhere of a good film.
I'll tell you this too, man. You can go back and listen to some of the old Dead Pit shows because they're still up from this period, I'm pretty sure. I think I pretty much put my guarantee that it was going to be awful because, again, we were talking about Vince Vaughn trying to be the new Norman Bates. Norman has a different type of charisma than a Michael Myers or a Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes for Freddy. Freddy was a fucking character that was made by Robert Englund, primarily. So, just that fact alone, I knew this was going to be a gigantic mess of a movie, piece of shit. And it was actually worse than I thought it would be, to be honest with you. I knew it would be bad. I think we both knew it would be bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anything could prepare us for the horror of the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, Uncle Bill. I really don't.
No. And from the very beginning scene, I knew we were in trouble. I just knew that it wasn't going to be good because, although it does have a pretty gruesome death scene in the beginning of it, it just looked like all those films that you can't stand, that generic kind of like Abercrombie and Fitch look to all the characters in it.
All these mopey fucking teenagers.
Yeah, and then you see Freddy and you're like, what in the hell is that? First of all, it looks just like somebody took modeling clay and just jammed it over his face and smeared it around, and that it took whatever shape that it
they wanted. They wanted him to look like a real burn victim.
You know what?
Because, you know, he really didn't die. He's not a spirit or anything. He's just a real guy that's burnt.
You know, this whole idea of making things real, you know what the problem is with that? Is that you can make something look real, but that's not really what movies are about. Because at the end of the day, everybody knows movies are fake on a certain level. The thing that makes people really believe in movies when they're watching it is if the characters seem legitimate. And if what is happening in the movie actually seems like it could actually happen, or you get interested in them, or they have meaningful conversations,
or if it's actually entertaining,
or if they're doing things that you actually like care about, and there's none of that going on in here. Like, yeah, he probably does look like a real burn victim, but you know the motives and everything in the film and all of the characters, you just don't get into the
film.
When
again they find the need to go back and tell the story of Freddy. And they try to make you, what was confusing to me is, they try to make you kind of sympathize with a guy that's killing teenagers now.
Yeah.
Like he's some sort of, like he's getting revenge for the fact that their parents murdered him or something, you know.
He's just so dull, too. Like, Freddy in the...
I don't even want to say it's the actor's fault entirely because... They go back, okay, Freddy, his voice is dubbed throughout the whole movie. Like, it's just somebody, you know, I guess it could have been him. They could have just altered the pitch of his voice.
That's what they did with Robert Englund.
And he's like, welcome to Freddy, I am, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, just a really deep, raspy, you know.
He had all the mannerisms. And he tried, but none of it worked.
I think of all the problem was too the director.
Yeah,
I mean,
because you don't have any pacing in the film. and you don't really care about any of the characters. And ultimately, that Rooney Mara, who would go on, oddly enough, to be really critically acclaimed in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, just a couple years later.
In this movie, she's just the worst fucking type of mopey, like, nothing, you'll never remember. Like, I would have never thought she would have gone on to do anything.
But, I mean, the truth is, it's like, you know, I mean, I'm sure actors are much like, you know, anybody else. It's, you know, what kind of project are they working on? Is it something that they're actually motivated on, or is it just some piece of shit, which this was? I think the director, Samuel Bayer, of the famed Bayer-Aspern family, we've talked about him many times, he'd never made a feature film before. I mean, this was the first time he'd made anything that was longer than a three-minute music video. And that's the studios for you. They just don't give a shit. They're like, we just want a movie out there that says Nightmare on Elm Street on it and has somebody that looks like fucking Freddy in it. And that's it. That's all we care about.
And they got that, yeah. And it was so bad that even the people they marketed it towards were like, this is bad. That's how bad it was. Like, it didn't even fool the people, like the retards.
I don't think it did that well in the theaters either. It was one of the first remakes to come along. And I think the trend is kind of dying now. I mean, it's not really, we haven't had a hit remake horror film out in a long ass time. So, but this is one of the first ones that really did kind of piss poor. And then, like, a year later, you had the Fright Night one that did even worse. So, I think the remake trend is slowly dying out. You're not really seeing as many of them
anymore.
Thank
God, though. But, I mean,
to go from that to the number one spot, which I think a lot of people are probably going to be upset here, but to me, this is the first movie that I thought of when I thought of the worst remake ever.
We used to talk about this one because we went and saw this one right around the same time we went and saw House of Thousand Corpses. And I remember just being excessively pissed off about both those films. But unlike House of Thousand Corpses, this movie does not get better.
I've tried at least two or three different times to rewatch it.
And it probably has, of all these movies, the biggest fan base of people that actually support it.
Yeah. And another reason, I mean, it's a fucking, I will argue this until my dying day that it's a piece of shit. It's an awful movie. Horribly cast. I don't think anybody does a good job in this movie. But the thing is, the reason why I would put it for sure number one, cause let's be honest, I mean, I'm sure I wouldn't want to watch April Fool's Day remake again or even Black Christmas or any of that shit.
No.
The reason this is number one is because this was a major hit. This kick-started all of the other movies that we talked about pretty much on here. I mean, of course, you had Psycho and The Hills Have Eyes. The Haunting. They came out years before this one. But those were like, okay, this is an all-time classic. They come out with one, maybe two remakes a year. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is, in my opinion, by far the number one shittiest remake of all time, it caused these studios to be like, holy shit, what fucking horror movie from the 70s and 80s do we have that we can come along and remake?
And they basically remade all of them.
And now we have duplicates of everything.
Have you ever said what it is yet?
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, yeah. Where to even begin? Like,
okay, the one thing that is always something that somebody talks about and is retarded is that one fucking shot of the camera zooming out of that girl's fucking head.
Right.
Oh, God! I'm going to come all over myself for that shot. Fucking retards.
I don't even know where to begin with. Okay. Let's begin at the beginning of the film. The beginning of the film, to me, actually had some promise that it would be good. Because the beginning of the film is just...
It had that one shot in it?
Well, no. The girl escapes, and kind of what you would want to see in a Texas Chainsaw Massacre film, like the final survivor gets out and meets up with the new kids that are coming through and then kills herself because they're driving like back towards where she's going. But from there, from that scene, what was very promising, Mm-hmm. It's just, first of all, Arlie Ermey shows up, and God bless him. I know people love him in that role and everything. It's really over the top and really stupid. And it's really not believable at all. And he's really only playing the drill sergeant in a police outfit from Full Metal Jacket. That's all he's doing. Mm-hmm. He's just like a dirtier version of that guy. And then you go into the house and you're introduced to the multitudes of stupid ass characters, including the guy that has no legs for some reason, and the woman that's really fat for some reason, and just a smorgasbord
and of mamaw.
Yeah, stupid, like, genetic defect.
Kids.
So they're wandering around. Then they're just wandering around the house for like what seems like hell and ever, and eventually Leatherface shows up. And I guess the thing that really bothers me about Leatherface is I know the guy who plays Leatherface, and I know he's a big piece of shit, and like,
right,
it's just hard to get behind a character that you know is just an asshole in real life.
And you know what his biggest role was up to the end?
Wasn't he in Batman? He was in Batman Returns.
He was in Batman Returns, but that wasn't his biggest role.
What was his biggest role?
He was Zangief in the Street Fighter movie.
Shit.
So
I had no idea.
Congratulations, retards, that went up to him and got his autograph. You now have Zangief's autograph from Street Fighter.
You can dig up Raul Julia and get him Bison's autograph now.
Okay. And you got to bear in mind, too, that I think the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre is probably top two horror movie of all time, in the top two. I think probably either one of us would probably say that.
Mm.
It's definitely the movie that, the one movie that's been ripped off more than any other. I mean, talking about hundreds and probably thousands of independent movies. Another thing, though, that I think that made that movie work and that hit home with people is how real that movie seemed. And we were talking about realism and how it works with horror movies, especially. Like, if you can create a character that you believe he's got somebody's fucking face on his face as a mask, and it looks legit, I mean, it looks like he actually skinned somebody's fucking face and stitched a mask together, and he's licking his fucking toothless chops, you know, and you just show a close-up of his face, and you're like, well, holy shit. That guy, I wouldn't want to get near that motherfucker, you know. You don't get that sense at all with the new Leatherface. For one thing, the new Leatherface mask looks like horse shit.
It does.
It looks like a big pile of fucking shit somebody fucking mashed on his face. I swear. And Leatherface was a fat guy, motherfucker. He wasn't some muscled-up retard. Wow. Okay. I'd be scared. If somebody's a fucking cannibal, they're eating humans. They're eating meat. Okay. They're going to be fat. They're going to be like fucking Leatherface from the original movie.
Well, that's one thing that I will say about the newer movies is that they all go for, not only are the kids, do they look impossibly like flawless, but all the monsters look like just like that, like roided up, superhuman, you know, fucking retards, like mongoloids were. And that's really like, just goes to show you the way that people are thinking now as opposed to then. There's no even attempt at realism. You got like,
it was like, oh, that looks like the guy from a haunted house. Yay.
Yeah, it does. And it looks really unrealistic and you really can't get behind it.
You know, and if anybody, whenever we have call-ins again or anything, I invite you. In fact, I beg you to call in and try to defend this movie. I know for a fact if you call in and try to defend it, for one thing, you're probably younger than 25. Guarantee you that. Because I don't know of anybody that's a fan of the original and a fan of that remake. Or at least on the same level. I mean, I've heard some people, I know, and the thing that pisses me off is too, there are fucking retards out there that probably, when you say Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they think about that.
Yeah.
They probably have no idea there was a movie made in 1974 called Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I think it's definitely got the biggest following of any of these remakes, though, of just people that like really, really consider it like a cult classic. And I still don't know why, really. Maybe it's the look of it. Like, it was one of the first movies that had that look, or except for Saw, that kind of grainy shit out look.
Shit diarrhea on the film set.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's, it could be, it reminds me of Carlos Mencia in a way. Because for a long time, people were really fooled by Carlos Mencia. They thought he was funny and like that kind of humor was edgy and stuff. And then the more you kind of like listen to him and the more it goes on, you just realize it's just a fucking lame kind of joke. That's the same thing I look at when I look at like the characters in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, I mean, I think the public are a lot like that too, where they're kind of like sheep. And that, oh, if so-and-so liked it and said it was good, I'm just going to like it and say, oh, it was good. I enjoyed it. You know, much like, you know, people that back in the early 90s that were buying fucking Bugle Boy and shit. Like, I don't think anybody, I hope not, at least back then thought, oh man, that's an awesome clothing line. Fucking Bugle Boy. Those Johnson shirts and shit.
Big Johnson.
Where people just go along with the crowd. Oh, it was good. You know, it was fine. I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 2003 is just one of those movies that it pisses me off more than any other movie that I think was ever made. I mean, honestly, because it just, all of the awesome parts of the original movie, it just did the exact opposite of everything. Like, if you look at the supporting cast that was even in it, I mean, you open up with the hitchhiker scene, okay? When I saw that as a kid, I was like, oh my God, who is that crazy fucking guy? He doesn't look like somebody that'd be in a movie.
Right.
You know, this must be real.
It really did. That's the thing about the original. It didn't look like a movie.
Right.
It looked like snuff footage and some crazy asshole that, like, went out and, like, murdered people. And the remake just looks like stylized garbage, like Saw. It's got that look where you're just like, it was run through a processor 50,000 times and just, it's horrible.
It is. Something else though, before we end this, that I wanted to talk about, since we did go through all 10 of these. And I'll defend, I mean, you know, Uncle Bill and I were going back and forth on what would be the number one. But if you look at the history of it and the fact that it kick-started basically all this shit that we're still kind of putting up with, I say it had to be Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But the thing that pisses me off is, and we've seen it online, we've dealt with it and stuff, are the fans of some of these movies, or just the fans of movies in general, that say, you have to separate yourself from the original film. You have to go in without thinking about anything that happened in, because this is a new vision of that. You know, that's their argument. What do you say about that?
I say the same thing I said when I first heard that argument, which is, all right, if that's the case, then don't call it the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Call it something else. Call it like Chainsaw Alley or something like that. If you don't want somebody to draw any comparison between the two films, then don't call it the exact same fucking thing and like expect people to just be like, oh, okay. I'm just going
to they have to because it has that brand on it. But yet,
they want the, it's just, whenever I hear people talk about remakes, like I said on, you know, the last show I did, whenever I hear them talk about it, it's always the same shit. They always talk, they want to include everybody, the old fans and the new fans. And it's the same thing with people who want to defend movies like this. They want everything, they want their cake and they want to eat it too. They want to say, okay, it's alright to name it that, but then you can't judge it by the fact that it is that movie. And that just doesn't make any sense. Like, they want to market it based on the name, but they don't want you to compare it to the original film. That's fucking stupid. That never happens.
And I think that these people, and a lot of people call us haters, but the bottom line is, man, we go to movies to be entertained, gives us something to talk about. I mean, we've been talking about horror movies for over a decade now together, probably longer than that. And this whole generation, people growing up, yeah, there's been some great original stuff coming out. But, I mean, I think that, you know, the kids that grow up today, they're not horror fans or have no interest in being horror fans because it's basically a recycled, you know, it's like recycling fucking Coke cans or something. I mean, it's the same damn stories and movies, but it's just done more, it's done poorly.
Yeah.
With less talented people that are just out to make money.
I think one day people are going to look back on this era and look at it the same way as that we look at, like, disco now. They're going to be like, wow, that was a fucking horrible idea, horrible mess, like, to make remakes like that. And people will be ashamed of the fact that they ever watched any of them. And that's just the way it'll be. Because that whole era is like a bad dream. It really is. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff that came out, but the majority of mainstream stuff that came out of the 2000, let's say like from 2000 to 2010, the majority of stuff that came out was shit like that. Just horrible remakes and reimaginings and recrappenings and like whatever. And I hope that they drove a nail in the coffin of that through making movies that as much as they did. I really do.
So that has been our 10 worst horror remakes of all time. So in 2 weeks, this is going to be the real challenge, Uncle Bill. We're going to do the opposite. We're going to be positive. Yay, positive.
Woo! I think we can do it.
And pick the 10 best remakes of all time.
Luckily, there'll be two of us working on it. So
there'll be a little bit of a challenge. But I think we can do it, too. I mean, there has been some good remakes, no doubt. Because that's all there. I mean, there have to be some.
You know, they made like,
it's 200 pretty much all that's been coming out in the theaters for the last 10, 11 years. So I look forward to doing that one because that one will be way more of a challenge. I think we come up with this top 10 way too easy for the worst because there's been so many. And we could talk about a lot more, too. We could probably do a top 50 worst remakes if we wanted to, if we had 8 hours to spend. But that is it for this particular segment. When we come back, we're going to be doing a review, and we have some announcements to make, don't we?
All right.
That sound good?
That sounds fine.
You look tired, bud.
I am.
I'm tired, too. I feel like somebody's beat my goddamn head in.
I did with my dick.
I wouldn't be able to feel that. Let's go back. Well, we'll be back, I guess.
Let's go back.
Let's go back there.
Yeah.
Deadpool.com. The mists
of infinity, they come, rising from the cold, damp earth to take what is now theirs.
My God, the earth is moving!
When the moon turns red, the dead shall rise and walk the earth. From the gates of hell, they have finally come. The gates of hell. No one under 17 admitted without parent or certified adult guardian.
Are you ready to get wet with some of these reviews?
I'm ready to get wet. I'm waiting.
Are you ready?
We waiting. We waiting.
Oh, shit.
We waiting.
To get wet. So, all right. Make some announcements, bitch.
Some announcements, Uncle Bill. Actually, pretty big announcement. I guess we can go ahead and talk about it. A lot of people are asking or concerned or are looking forward to Dead Pit on the Road Season 4.
Woo! Woo!
Uncle Bill. And we do have, I don't know when exactly we're going to have this out, but we do have an announcement that Danny Miller, one of the best freaking artists of all time, he is doing custom artwork for Dead Pit on the Road Season 4.
He is. I talked to old Danny for quite a while.
Old Danny boy.
A few days ago, yeah.
So he's, from what I've heard, it's going to be, I haven't seen anything from it yet. I'm thinking it's going to be fucking pretty badass, though.
It's bound to be amazing. I know it's got, from what I understand, it's got a very comedic element to it, which it should with us.
Yeah, for shizzle, my nizzle.
And it's bound to be amazing if he did it.
Yeah, because like all of his stuff, like he does all the Cinema Overdrive posters and stuff like that. And, I mean, you and I both have a lot of his stuff.
Well, you know he does stuff for The Walking Dead, too. Though. Yeah. Yeah.
I actually did official stuff for The Walking Dead, so it's a pretty big deal. He worked closely with our good buddy Greg Nicotero, who's never going to do the show.
Nope, he won't. He's got too much money. Doesn't need to do it. He's like, what am I going to talk? What do I need to promote? I make like $1 billion doing this shit.
Yeah, so. And also we have the Dead Pit movie poster collection videos, Uncle Bill, which been long awaited, much anticipated.
Yeah, if you haven't seen them, if you've never before seen them, then this will be the one to watch because this is the one that has classic movie posters included. I mean, we're talking about stuff that
needs
to be
seen. This is the Ball of Shock Collar edition.
It is, yeah. And we've got a lot of feedback on it. A lot of people seem to have liked it and get them excited about posters and collecting it.
It got me a little wet, made my Peter puke a little bit on myself.
I know it did. You're like, bah.
Yeah, because it is like, they're combined, both of the videos together, about 40 minutes. The first part's already up. The second part will be up sometime this weekend. And, highly advise you guys check it out. Any other stuff going on, Uncle Will, you want to mention on here?
Oh, shit. No, but I would think that we'd probably be doing a lot more videos soon.
Are we going to film you blowing me? We can put that up there.
Yeah, we got to get the Dead Pit sex tape out there.
That'd be awesome shit. We'd be on TMZ then.
Yeah. They had that one guy, that Harvey, whatever guy, talking about us.
Harvey Weinstein.
I just found out, CK fucking Uncle Bill. And it's on camera.
So, yeah, I mean, a lot more video stuff. We'll probably be doing, because I actually have a lot of requests. People want me to do rank other series of movies, which I don't know if I want to do, because...
I tell you the one you should do, though, is the Hellraiser series. You should rank that series completely.
I'm pretty sure that would never happen.
Think about this for a minute. This will blow your mind. The entire Hellraiser series is out on Blu-ray and Friday 13th and like Halloween art.
I think Halloween is. Aside from, well, no, 4 and 5 aren't. But yeah. The other ones are. Or the third one isn't yet either. Nobody really cares about the third one, though, overall, still.
But you shouldn't say that. Sean Clark's head
It's still true, though. There's still people out there that's like, oh, God, that was the one without Michael in it.
No, those people don't have any sense.
So, I guess that is it for the announcements and stuff. Like, I don't think I have anything else to mention on here. Fright Night Film Fest is slowly approaching, so we'll be talking more about that in the next few weeks, I guess. So,
no, mama.
I guess we got to go to the review section.
Oh shit!
Which we only have one review again. This is getting to be bullshit, but we got to start reviewing more stuff.
I just can't. The shit that they're sending us is just—I just don't want to watch any of that stuff, man. Like, damn, there's got to be something.
You don't want to watch Sex Hell?
No, I don't.
Well, there isn't a whole lot of stuff coming out, but if it's like this particular movie, it sounded like something I would like, and I ended up actually kind of liking it, so I'm kind of glad I watched it.
Did you?
And that is The Divide.
Oh, shit.
Which I had actually heard a couple of people talking about it. It's a movie that Xavier Jens, the director, did. He actually did...
Didn't he do Wreck? What did he do?
He did
Frontiers. Yeah, Frontiers, that's right. I don't know why I thought he did Wreck.
And he's done a couple other movies. Hitman, the made for, well, the video game adaptation, whatever. And he did this movie that, an independent movie starring Michael Biehn nowadays, I don't think that name really does much anything.
No, there's probably not a whole lot of pull.
It probably turns people away. But, if you look at the other cast members, I mean, they have Laura German, who's been in a bunch of stuff, and Courtney B. Vance, who's no relation to me. He's actually done a whole lot of TV stuff. He's a really good actor, I think. He's an underrated actor. He's in it. Rosanna Arquette, who I haven't seen in many years in anything. I don't know if she's had some sort of personal problems or what. But, I mean, I thought the cast in this overall was probably the best part of this. It was an independent movie that actually had a pretty solid group of characters playing the roles. And I guess you had to, because the whole plot of the movie is like a nuclear attack on, I think it's in New York City, and then there's New York somewhere. And it has trapped this group of people that's in this apartment complex, you know, together for months.
Like a bunker or something. Like underground.
Yeah, some type of underground basement area or something.
To me, though, the thing about this movie that's more, the most interesting thing about this particular movie is that it's always fascinated when a director does like method directing with his actors. And I was reading a story about this film in, I think it was Rue Morgue recently too, and he actually wanted them to argue. So he would pit like certain people in the cast of the actual movie against other people who would be, you know, in the film, their characters would not get along. They're in trying to create tension with the real actors to try to help with the tension on screen and stuff too. And I guess it worked, but it's just a fascinating idea that he's essentially trying to piss people off in the cast so that they'll fight with people.
Right.
And the title of the film, The Divide, really has to do with the relationships between the people in the bunker and what happens.
And really how they kind of form packs with each other, and kind of their personalities change drastically over the months. And like, the thing about this movie is like, I know that it didn't have a big budget.
No.
But the director made it seem like, it totally seemed like something I'd see in a theater, though. Like, it just looked like a big time movie, especially at the end. Like, I thought the end sequence where you finally saw what was out there.
Right.
I mean, they did a really freaking good job with that.
Yeah, and not to give anything away or anything, but it is pretty amazing how they did that, too.
But
did you not think, though, man, like, I'm sorry, but that Michael Biehn, like, his acting was...
The thing is, though, Michael Biehn, like, he's not... I mean, they credit him as the star in it, but he's not really in the movie that much.
Right, but in the beginning, where he's, like, doing... And he's talking with the cigar in his mouth and everything, and you can't... It's like... This is hokier than fuck. Like, I just couldn't.
Right. But aside from him, though, didn't you think everybody? I thought everybody.
Yeah,
was
the rest
really
of the
good.
Cast is like unknown, basically. So they're actually really good. But Michael Biehn's like, you're like, fuck.
I think they need to get Michael Biehn in there. I don't know if some people think he can sell movies or what.
I guess, but he can't. Clearly,
this movie though, like, has received some praise and stuff online, and like, I really did enjoy it. I mean, I was, at first, like when it first started, I came a hair from actually turning it off, but I'm really glad I didn't, cause like, I don't know, man. I mean, I really like the movies with similar plot lines to that, and I think that this is one of the better ones as far as the acting goes. Like, everybody, aside from, I kind of agree with you, Michael Biehn, but everybody else, I thought that they really, really did a good job together, and it just worked.
It's not a bad little film, you know. When you really get down to it, it's low budget. It takes place mostly in one place, but you know, some of the best films actually did that. It reminds me of like a mini version of The Mist, like the way that the characters develop in the film and everything. And maybe that's what he was going for. I don't know, but at least the director took the time to try to like prepare the cast and everything in it.
Yeah, and actually give you guys some spoiler warnings ahead if you don't want to hear anything, just turn the review off now. I thought that it was really cool that they never really told you exactly what the other people were.
Right.
You know, you never did really learn if it was like some other foreign or alien race or, you know, foreigners coming in there and doing that shit.
Foreigners! Get your ass off my yard, damn foreigner.
But they never really did tell you exactly, you know, what was going on.
No.
Fucking foreigner!
Where are you from?
You look like a foreigner.
You ain't from around here. I know you
ain't. Foreigner. Oh, God.
It'd be awesome if that was the people that were actually responsible for it.
Oh, I gotta say, though, we got the Blu-ray version. I thought the Blu-ray was great. It was actually the first, I got a new TV not too long ago. It was the first movie I ever watched on my new TV.
There you go, bub.
And it showcased it really well.
Yeah, not a bad film. Independent film. Michael Biehn sucks. That'll sum it up.
Odd enough, I think Anchor Bay did release this, too.
They did, yeah.
So.
They tried really hard to make it suck, but it just didn't work.
So, that is The Divide. I think that everybody should actually go check it out. It's actually an entertaining little movie. It's got a great cast. Not so much that much of a horror movie or anything, but no. I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yep, so there you go. I don't know what the special features are because they don't have the Blu-ray, but you just enjoy
it. Bring it again. That seems to be a growing trend with you.
It's from Anchor Bay, so enjoy.
They probably had like a commentary on it and some behind the scenes.
We were guessing. Yeah, it had some featurettes and maybe. So,
that is it for the show, though. Remember, in 2 weeks, we're going to do the top 10 horror remakes of all time.
And that should be an interesting show to come up with 10 of those. So we'll talk at you later, boys and girls. Bye.
Foreigners.
Foreigners.
Deadpit.com.